Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Kerry Conran's 2004 film Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. Hey, man, what's going on?
Not dangerous.
Nice. Also joining us today is a very good friend of mine that I met up at the 2011 Sundance Film Festival. He's a writer for thefilmstage.com, Rafi Azdourian. Thanks for joining us today on the Not Just New Movies podcast.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish up with listener voicemails and emails. And you guys can always call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So I will start with the character name game this week. For those who are unfamiliar, we pick a character, and then so I'll pick the character this week, and you guys will have to guess at the end of this episode as to what movie that character came from. And the hint is that this character has to be in some way related to a movie that was released in wide release in theaters this past weekend. So the character name game, or the character name for this week, is Kit Walker. Kit Walker. So be thinking about that, and then we'll come back to it at the very end. But for now, let's move on into the media consume section. Tyler, let's start with you. What have you been consuming this week?
Oh, this week I got a chance to watch Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
I'm
like 9 months behind the curve on that movie.
All right.
But did you have any questions for me about it? First of all, I figured.
Well, yeah, just general thoughts. I mean, did you like it?
I liked it, but I can understand why it didn't do as well, because people have said it's got that niche audience. It had all kinds of crap thrown into this movie, and I think that's kind of why regular people, middle America, quote unquote, is what you want to call it, why they wouldn't want to pay $12 to see a movie that they're not going to get. I mean, if you get the references that they make and why Michael Cera is wearing an ironically not funny t-shirt, and you can kind of understand why the movie is, you know, above and beyond the kind of film that everyone was talking about. And, you know, the fight scenes and the kind of storyline and stuff, if you could keep up with it amid the mass cuts through the film, I really liked it. So, I mean, again, like, I thought it was crazy, but well worth at least one viewing.
I love that movie. Yeah, I thought it was great. But I know exactly what you're talking about. It speaks to kind of that specific audience, and you kind of had to have grown up a little bit in that, like, 8-bit video game culture, yeah. Kind of. And you also have to kind of be a fan of comics too. But that's one of the thing about this movie. It's like one of the best comic book adaptations I've seen in like a long time. That's really faithful to the source material. And I mean, if you don't have fun watching this movie, I feel bad for you, because this movie is just so much fun. I've probably seen it like 3 times now. It's one of the few movies I've actually rewatched from last year. And Edgar Wright just has not made a bad film, in my opinion. And I think he continually gets better. I can't wait to see what he does next. And Scott Pilgrim was in my top 10 for sure.
I'm totally right there with you. And I think I said the same thing in my review, that it was like one of the best adaptations, or maybe I think I actually called it like a perfect adaptation, because it just
it kind of is. Yeah, like, it is.
The entire essence of these 6 books and condenses it down into one movie, which automatically, as fans of the source material and stuff, we're all like, you know, our first reaction is like, oh, wow, there's no way in hell they're going to be able to do this. But they did it. Yeah, and the reason I love it is they weren't afraid to diverge a little bit from the books and kind of form the movie in a way that it had to be told in like a 2-hour time period, but still kept absolutely like the heart and just the awesomeness of that comic series. So I really, really love that movie.
Agreed. Yeah. And I read the comic too before having seen the movie, and the comic is great, and it goes well with the movie, I feel, you know?
Yeah. Definitely. It's also like different enough where if you're a fan of the movie and you don't feel like you need to read the comics, I would say read them anyway, because the ending is different.
Exactly.
And and it's just, yeah, it's a very good kind of companion piece.
The video game is also pretty good, the one that's out.
Yeah.
But it's really hard. It's really hard, but it's fun too.
Tyler, anything else you've been watching?
Yeah, I was afraid I wasn't going to like it, first off, because, you know, I'm not the big Sarah supporter that everybody else is.
Yeah.
But I did end up liking it. And then the guys at the Frotcast at filmdrunk.com were mentioning how Scott Pilgrim's kind of a, it's revealed that he's kind of a dick at the end, where he's just taking over all these girls, and like, he really doesn't redeem himself. He just takes advantage of that second life video game style and just does things differently so that he beats the game. So I don't know if he, whatever, you know, that was kind of the low point of the film, I guess, as far as character redemption.
He's kind of like an anti-hero, sort of. I mean, he's kind of supposed to just be a dick, though.
Yeah, but, it's just completely self-absorbed. Like, nobody, you know, he doesn't really care what's going on with anything in the world outside of his own interests. So, yeah, he is kind of just a douchebag main character.
I really dug Aubrey Plaza's character, the record owner and slash coffee shop employee or whatever. She was really funny.
Yeah. The other thing about that movie is, if you've read the comics, the character, like the casting for Scott Pilgrim, should have won every casting award if there is such a thing, because those characters look almost exactly like actresses look almost exactly like they do in comics.
And particularly the villains, the ex-boy, all the exes, they looked exactly like the comic. But, yeah,
totally.
Is there color in the comics, or is it all black and white?
It's all black and white.
Black and white. Yeah.
I was like, oh, how do they tell the hair color in the comics? I thought it was in black and white. So I guess you just have to go. I've got a Kindle, so I've also been reading this free Star Wars novella that they have at Amazon.com. So if you have a Kindle and you like free Star Wars novels, check this one out. It's called The Lost Tribe of the Sith, and they're broken up into chapters, like mini books, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Reading it so far, it's pretty well written, I guess. I don't know what the hell's going on, because it takes place 5,000 years before Star Wars: A New Hope.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my reaction too. So I was like, well, might as well read it, see what was going on 5Gs in the past. So they still have space worthy technology, like hyperspace and starships and all this stuff. I was like, when were these people in the Dark Ages? I wonder.
Yeah. Good God.
10,000, 15,000, 20 years ago, they were like Conestoga wagons to different planets and stuff. So I've been reading that, and then like Rafi mentioned, the Angry Video Game Nerd, he had a new episode this week that is Star Wars. Like, he goes over all the Atari, Nintendo, and Super Nintendo Star Wars games, and it's pretty good. I liked it. And he's kind of on and off with me in 2010. Like, some of his episodes were good, some of them kind of good.
Just give people like a brief rundown of who that is, in case they don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned it before. He's James Rolfe. He owns the website Cinemassacre, and he's kind of like a independent filmmaker of sorts. But his most popular character is the angry video game nerd who only plays like retro games. You know, not
that are typically usually like really hard and stuff.
Yeah, they're really hard and they're really shitty. And so he plays them, and the whole video is him getting aggravated and pointing out the bad parts of the game. And it's sometimes hilarious ensues.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he did Star Wars this week, which I was surprised he, out of 99 episodes that he's done, he hasn't really done a Star Wars episode, which kind of surprised
me. So how many games did he cover in it? Like a bunch of them, or was it just...
He covered 4 Atari games, the 2 that came out on NES, and then the 3 Super Star Wars games on SNES. And then he covered Shadows of the Empire on the N64.
Wow. Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I remember that game, and that one was hard, too. I could... It didn't help that I didn't have an N64 when I was trying to play it, so I had to play it at my house. So I was like, oh, yeah,
that game. That game was pretty awesome, though. I
read the book, so I got that part of the story. But as far as the game, I don't really know what happened.
I've only read one Star Wars book, but it was awesome. And I'm more of a Star Trek fan than a Star Wars fan, but this... It was like back in like 7th grade. It was called Heir to the Empire. I don't know if you've read that one. And it's like, you've read that. Yeah, that one's amazing, right?
Yeah, that was like the first one.
That was like the first big one, right?
Yeah, that was the one that broke away from tried to create like the future of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I remember that being cool. So Google that or Amazon that.
Right on.
Put it on Kindle.
Or Kindle. Yeah.
Anything else, Tyler?
Nope, that's it.
Okay. All right, Rafi, let's go to you. What have you been consuming lately?
I needed to finish up my Oscar roundup, so there's only one film that I hadn't seen, which ironically is now supposedly like the front runner, which was The King's Speech. And it's, you know, it is a solid film all around. The acting, the directing, the script, the cinematography, the set design. I mean, you can go on and on. Everything about this film is solid, but I found it a little bit just, you know, slow and a little uninviting, especially at the beginning. It's just a little stiff. You know, it's kind of like the king himself. He's a little bit stiff at first, and then after a while, you know, he gets more comfortable. Definitely the ending is great, and it builds up. I mean, the performances, like, everything is great about this movie, but yet it was still a little bit, like, it's a little boring. And, yeah. It's just like an old people British. It's like an old British movie. It kind of reminded me to a little bit like The Queen, but like more old traditional style. That just kind of like, you know, very proper British, good acting, you know, like the Shakespearean parts with Jeffrey Rush where he's like, I mean, I love Richard III. So when he does that speech for his audition, and like, I love that. But it's still like everything about it just was like, okay, I get it. You know? Yeah.
To me, it screamed, like, I liked the movie a lot. Just like you said, you know, every aspect of it is really good, with the exception of maybe the cinematography, which I thought was kind of just
stale.
Average. Yeah, just like nothing, no real.
I mean, there's like good composition to the shots, and there's like a few cool shots, like when they do that dolly thing in and out, you know, where they're training.
Yeah.
So, and like some of the crowd shots, too, where you get this large sense of like the big crowds that he's seeing. Cool, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I liked the movie. I just think it's such a pandering movie for the Oscars. You know, if you were to try to make a movie that is going to sweep the Oscars and you had a formula to do it, The King's Speech would be that formula.
Totally.
So it's like, you know, it's clearly geared toward an older audience, which is what the Academy is comprised of. It's balanced. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going – this year it happens to be going head-to-head with The Social Network, which is clearly more aimed at our generation and all that
stuff.
So it's like you really – I really think it's a – it's going to be a close race as far as Best Picture goes this year, but
it is, because I mean, it has elements to some degree that are better than Social Network, but I feel like Social Network is just a more kind of important film for this kind of generation.
Yeah.
For you know, and it was just, I thought, more entertaining.
Yeah. Tyler, have you had a chance to see The King's Speech?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I was really bad movie wise in 2010. I think I've seen The Social Network. I don't know what – I haven't seen a lot. I'm embarrassed to even name off the movies I haven't seen yet.
That's all right. We won't put you through that.
Just assume I've seen all of them except one.
Okay, there we go.
Hey, that's how it was for me. Yeah, and then the other thing I saw was at Sundance, the last movie that I saw was this really cool action movie called Elite Squad 2, which was like the highest grossing Brazilian movie of all time, like outgrossed Avatar, all these movies. And it's just like this really like kind of gangster film about the favelas and the gangs and corrupt cops and this like squad of cops that just have no mercy and will just go in and kill people and take care of the gangsters. So I really enjoyed the second one a lot at Sundance. So I went out and seeked out the first one, which is available on Blu-ray. It was released in 2007. I think it's the Weinstein Company released it. I'm not 100% sure, but these movies are pretty dope. If you like kind of just like good action cop movies that have that kind of level of just really grittiness and just like good action scenes, very like, I mean, Brazil is such a, you know, rich locale to shoot a movie and set a movie, and it's like all in Rio.
Sweet.
So yeah, it's pretty sweet. I definitely recommend it. It's called the Elite Squad. Search it out. I don't think the second one is going to be available to see here for a little bit, but at least the first one's out, and the first one is pretty awesome. They're kind of pretty different films, though. The second one deals a lot more with like the corruption, whereas the first one is more just about like the police squad itself, like how raw they are. But pretty cool movie. Definitely check it out.
How would you compare the action between the two?
It feels like there's more action in the first one. Like the first one has a lot more just like straight up just like killing scenes and all that. But the set pieces in two, when the action does, like there's not as much action in the second one, but when it does happen, it's like more epic. It's like way bigger scale, and it's just like these huge grandeur shots. Like you could tell they had a bigger budget on the second one. So when they do the action scenes, it's like very epic in scope, and but it's more story driven with like all the different like ties in. But they're both really solid movies. I mean, if you kind of like those style of movies, you can't go wrong. But for looking out for these,
cool. Anything else you've been seeing?
Not really. I've been doing a lot of video gaming. You know, I've been playing the Killzone 3 beta. I've been playing Little Big Planet 2. So I've been on my gaming other than those movies. And
nice.
Yeah.
How's Little Big Planet 2?
It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I mean, I played a lot of the user created levels as opposed to just, you know, plowing through the story. And I mean, it's insane the level of the exponential level of creativity you can have now, because like you can do like programming stuff that you couldn't do in the first one. So there are all sorts of kinds of games now. It's not just the platforming. It's like there's like arcade style games, there's shooter games, there's racing games, like people are just going insane. And it's one of these games that it's probably fine to wait like another 2 to 4 months to pick it up, or even 6 months, because the levels are just going to keep coming.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be a better value when it's discounted later on in the year. So, I mean, unless you're in the rush, because there's a lot of games coming out. I mean, Killzone 3, there's a free beta for that right now. I wasn't a big fan of the new Call of Duty, but I love first-person shooters, and mm-hmm. the new Killzone is amazing. So definitely, and that's free for anyone if with a PS3, so download that, check that out.
Yeah, it seems like Little Big Planet 2 has just kind of like a never-ending supply of, like, you're never going to get tired of the game because there's always people creating levels and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of bad levels, too. Like, you encounter a lot of levels that it's like, you can't really finish this level because it's broken, or
right.
you know, things like that.
They
but
just spelled their name and you just have to run by and then
But the good thing about 2 is that there's better ways to like filter levels, and there's like Media Molecule, people that created the game, they like curate a whole section of levels, so it's easy to find the good ones, and it's become a harder chore to find the bad ones, but they still pop up here and there. So
nice.
Yeah, I just type in super fast vehicles and the first one, that's the user levels I like viewing.
Yep.
Cool. For me, I haven't really had a chance to watch a lot. I've kind of been sick this week and working a bunch. One thing that I did want to mention very briefly, and I'll probably bring this up again on future episodes of the podcast as the series continues, but I've started watching a show called Lights Out on FX. Have you guys seen this?
Mm-mm.
I have it in my DVR. Don't ruin anything for me.
Okay. It's a it's a boxing show, or, you know, it claims to be a boxing show. There's actually not a lot of boxing in it. It's all about the drama of this character named Patrick Lights Leary, who was the former heavyweight champion of the world. And if you like the programming of FX, I feel like you're going to like this show. It's got the kind of grittiness of like a Justified and some of the Terrier stuff. I mean, Terriers was a little bit more lighthearted, but there's a lot of drama going on, and it takes just a little bit to get into, maybe one or two episodes or something, but I'm kind of hooked already, and I wasn't completely sold on the show when I first started watching it, but they do such a good job of adding problems to the storyline, the overall narrative, without resolving them. So you're just more and more like interested in what's going on and how the hell these people are going to get out of this situation that they're in. And I know that's like ridiculously vague, but I'm just trying to keep it spoiler free for Tyler. So I would recommend, you know, since it's early on in the series, if you're, you know, if you like boxing, or just like generally kind of good drama, a lot of family related stuff and things like that, definitely go back and kind of see if you can catch up on Lights Out before it gets too far along in its
run. Is it like The Fighter?
It's
not
it's,
you.
it's kind of a little it's like The Fighter, but more corrupt and okay. just darker, I think.
Do they have Boston accents?
No, but the guy is Irish, I think.
I'm out. Oh, okay. I'm out.
I'm out.
So yeah, it's called Lights Out. I believe it airs. I don't remember what time. It's
Tuesday 10 or something.
Yeah. That's right.
Is Archer on FX?
Archer is on FX.
That is. I did watch the new episodes of that. That is an awesome show.
Yeah.
It's an animated show. Really funny. Hilarious.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. We're huge Archer fans on this podcast.
Okay. Did you guys watch Home Movies? Have you guys watched Home Movies?
Home Movies? What is that?
I've seen a couple episodes. When
oh,
I was
dude. you gotta watch Home Movies. That's where, what's the main, I forget his name, the guy
H.
who is Archer.
John Benjamin.
Yeah, he was this character, Coach McGurk, in this other show that was on Cartoon Network on Adult Swim called Home Movies. I think there's like 4 or 5 seasons of it. It was by the same people that did Dr. Katz. Dude, this is like one of my favorite TV shows of all time. Home Movies, if you haven't seen him, Brendan Small. He went on to do that like death metal cartoon. Yeah, exactly. But before that, they did this show, and this show was just brilliant. And he's like, he steals like every episode as Coach McGurk, the soccer coach, who's like an alcoholic. Insanely hilarious. If you like Archer, definitely, and you haven't seen Home Movies, definitely go check out Home Movies.
Will do. That sounds awesome. Cool. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow.
A man came to see me today. He was terrified. Said someone was coming for us.
This world will end.
I asked him who he was so afraid of. He repeated one name. Totenkopf.
They show up without warning, take what they need, and then they disappear without a trace.
I want this story.
Nothing gets published until I say so.
Totenkopf's building a doomsday device.
Earth will be incinerated.
What have you got me into this time?
Nothing you can't handle, Frankie.
They've started a countdown.
Enemy warships closing fast. Can't hold them off any longer.
They've broken through the perimeter.
Send reinforcements. Send everything you got.
Oh my God. They're everywhere.
I'm on my way.
How do we get past those machines?
Leave that to me.
Five. Four.
Joe!
I see it!
3. 2.
All right, so Sky Captain: The World of Tomorrow came out in 2004. It was directed by, written and directed by a guy named Kerry Conran, and this is the only thing that this guy has done. He did, I think, like an episode of one TV show like years before or something.
So you're going to say One Tree Hill. I was like,
No, not quite that bad.
He did an episode of One Tree Hill.
But I don't know, like, let's just go around and get some brief thoughts before we really get into it.
Hold on. Do you know the story, though, about, like, how he, like, you know, he was, like, an everyday, you know, Joe person. He had this idea to make the movie. He spent, like, 2 or 3 years making, like, a trailer that was basically turned into the short.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed that to John Avney, or whatever his name is, mm-hmm. the producer. And he was so impressed that he helped him develop this. So he kind of was like, you know, this everyday guy who like had this dream to make this film, spent like tons of time. I think he made the blue screen in his living room. So it's one of these like, you know, rags to riches story of like he did it in his basement. He made this thing that really impressed this big Hollywood producer. They went to the studios. They got all the big stars for it, and then he made the movie, which that's an awesome story in itself, but. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of this movie, but we can get into a little bit more why. But I just feel like, you know, it visually, it really is amazing. Like, he did push a lot of the digital technology, and it's one of the earliest completely digital movies where it's all shot with blue screen. But this movie just lacks so much, like, soul and character, and everything about the acting is just robotic and stale. And they might as well just have used CG actors because,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. But anyways, that's like my kind of, my force. My
I'm glad
cents.
We all three didn't like it.
Well, Ben seemed to, you
no, I like,
this, right?
No, what I meant to say is I'm glad we don't all agree. I'm glad there's going to be back and forth.
Yeah. Okay.
So Tyler, let's go with you. What did you think?
Yeah, no, I'm completely opposite on you, Rafi. I was preparing this line for when we introduced the film. I was gonna say, well, we say all the time that they don't make movies like they used to. Well, this would be an example where they went back and made a movie like they used to make movies. And you mentioned the robotic acting and the character development, but if you go look at like a movie like this in the 50s or the late 40s or even the early 60s. It's exactly
like it's anachronistic. It's like the cliches were intended.
It's just the like the little sidekick gets kidnapped and the girl.
It's the
journalist.
1939 serials. It's like they always have these kind of smart aleck. Yeah. No, yeah, I get that.
I loved it. I love that about it. And I was, you know, it was kind of just cool because some of those movies that they used to make were really shitty. And it's just kind of nice to see that kind of storyline brought into the 21st century, even though the acting didn't evolve it really at all. But the visual effects and what they tried to do 50, 60 years ago, they can achieve now. And they kind of
Right. Me
over.
Yeah, I was... I wasn't really sure how I was going to react to this movie going in because this was the first time I've ever seen it. And I talked to Rafi about it before I watched it and knew that he wasn't really a big fan of it. So I wasn't really preparing myself to like it too much. And I came away surprisingly liking it way more than I thought I was going to, probably for the same reasons that Tyler mentioned in that, like, it very much knows what it is and plays to this very specific style, and I thought it did it very well. There's not a lot of originality to the story at all. It's very kind of cookie cutter and very predictable the whole way through, but it's just kind of a ride. Like, they know that their big selling point is the visuals, and they really kind of knock that aspect out of the park. So the rest of it is just kind of... it's just kind of there, you know. It's clear that to me that Conran was very influenced by the same type of stuff that, like, Spielberg and Lucas were influenced on with Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, like the whole Indiana Jones, the way that wow. series came.
I mean, there's some scenes, the Star Wars and Indiana Jones are, like, referenced so much in this movie. Mm-hmm. It kind of got a little sickening for me. Like, especially, like, the whole, like, opening, like, attack on New York, and then, like, Jude Law coming in, like, that was, like, totally, like, just straight up, like, Hoth or, like, the Death Star. I mean, and that's the other thing, like, 70% of this movie is people in a cockpit. It's just, like, with the green screen, which, you know, is fine, because I understand the visuals is what they're trying to sell with this movie, but it's just, like, every moment in between there, it kind of takes me out of it for a little bit, just because it's, like, so just dead space, air, you know?
Yeah, that's one thing that I will say is, like, they could have, well, and, you know, you can't really fault this because this really was, like, a precursor to a lot of those digital backlot movies like Sin City and 300 and all that stuff. So they haven't really perfected the technology yet, but that was one kind of complaint.
It was one of the early ones, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the complaints that I had, was, like, a lot of times the visuals did look really great, but anytime the characters were going through a particular environment, they didn't interact with it at all. It wasn't like...
Yeah. Or any of the running scenes, like when Gwyneth Paltrow is running away from, like, it just looks bad.
Yeah. I mean, and, like, there's a scene where they kind of are walking through the jungle a little bit, and it's just nothing moves. There's no wind in the background.
Yeah.
None of the branches are swaying or anything like that. It's not like...
Also, doesn't it feel like sometimes the sight lines are off? Like, they're looking a little too far up this way? Or...
I did notice that a couple times. There's one scene in particular where they find this mini elephant in Jennings' lab, tiny little thing, which I don't know if that was ever actually explained, by the way.
Probably not.
I don't know why, what happened to it.
They're looking down and, like, they're totally not looking at where they should, you know, they're not looking where they should be.
But that's the funny thing about the movie is because I think they meant to do that because, again, it looks like those movies – the precursor to science fiction and the fire pilot movies of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Like, the acting was bad, and people, you know, they had these sets that were built in a soundstage where there wasn't wind blowing. And I just think I just thought it was funny. I was laughing because it looked like the old movies. And I've been watching a lot of Mystery Science Theater, so they play a lot of those old movies. And
I just wasn't charmed enough by it to have that kind of same reaction.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. No, it's totally fair, and I understand totally understand your point. It's just, like, for me, that the sentimentality of those old movies just was too artificial. It was just too manufactured that it just felt even more fake than that stuff. Like, you know, like, and, like, maybe you're right. Maybe they played it up when they were maybe that was one of Conran's directions, like, play up that stuff, and maybe that's why it feels, like, so cheesy to me, or so, like, you know, I mean, God, like, Angelina Jolie's accent and things. I mean, like, I know, I get it. It's like, that would be, like, in the comic, or, you know, but I don't know.
Tyler, that kind of reminded me, and we shouldn't really, like, I don't want to get off into a tangent here about M. Night Shyamalan, but that reminded me of of The Happening, where the acting in The Happening was so terrible, and I know that that had to be done on purpose because that movie was supposed to be kind of like one of those 1950s horror movies, you know, like the body snatchers and all that stuff, because Mark Wahlberg was horrifyingly bad in that film, and I know that he's a good actor. We've seen him act well, so I know that must have been a stylistic choice, and I think, you know, Sky Captain, in this case, you're right. I think they probably did kind of put it down as a on purpose, basically. Anybody else?
Shyamalan did that with that other movie.
What's that?
And then Shyamalan did that other thing with that other movie.
There's your tangent.
So we didn't go too far. I was kind of.
Like, the thing that I also liked visually about the movie, I guess since we're kind of still talking about that, is, like, it kind of felt like a live-action comic book, almost. There's some stuff in there that was really cool that even movies like Sin City and the ones that have come after it haven't really done. There's that scene in the beginning where Gwyneth Paltrow's character is sitting at the table kind of typing on her typewriter and, like, the newspaper.
And the newspaper in the background.
In the background.
But that, to me, was just like, hey, we're doing this on a green screen. Look, we can green screen this out.
Yeah, no. But, like, I love the fact that it's so blatantly done like that, and it's just they
it's like same with all the lighting in it. It's, like, so over-the-top film noir. It's like, I get it. The shadows, you know? It's just
yeah,
like,
I was thinking that it looked a lot like Sin City, only in color slightly.
But, like, none of it was motivated by anything. It was just there for style's sake because they were like, okay, we need to give this movie a look, so we're gonna overlight everything with the shadows, make it really super pulpy, super film noir, and then, you know, put this filter on all the video to make it look somewhat filmy, which that filter kind of got annoying after a while too. I mean, the visual style gets a little, even though they're changing vistas and all that and they're, you know, traveling around the world, this the look of it just gets a little played out by the end, I feel.
Okay. I didn't tire of it the entire time because I really liked what they were where they were going. And yeah, it definitely is kind of inspired by a lot of that stuff with the, you know, like flying over the map and seeing the longitude and latitude on the ground and like the globe trotting aspects and stuff.
Well, it's funny, I was watching it off my computer on my high def television, and so I had a monitor cord into an HDMI cord, and so I was watching it and like the blacks were really black, and like you were saying, they're trying to make it like gritty noir. You couldn't hardly see what was going on for most of the movie. The blacks were like solid blacks on my high def TV, so I had to keep looking over to my computer screen and be like, okay, he's holding a watch or he's holding whatever he's holding. I couldn't see it on my TV. So maybe, and then I tried, you know, adjusting my TV, but yeah, there were a lot of dark areas to the movie.
I think all that shadow stuff is exactly what Rafi was saying, where it's like playing into the kind of German expressionism and all that kind of stuff, like the Fritz Lang, the Metropolis. Like,
different
references.
Even the first scene of like the Empire State Building or whatever building that was. You just see the Metropolis poster.
Yeah. And they've got like a couple times they have where people are lined up in front of the camera, like either holding guns or pointing up into the sky, and it looks like these old propaganda posters.
Right,
and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Like the three hands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It looked like, did you ever see Justice League, A New Frontier, the DC animated movie?
I think I did see that. It's been a long time, though.
Like going for that pulpy 50s, 60s artwork feel.
Yeah, and like the city and stuff, it kind of reminded me of the Gotham City of Batman the Animated Series. Did you guys get
that? Batman Returns.
Yeah, I guess so, to a lesser degree, although Batman Returns, I feel like, looked really plastic, and this stuff kind of, it had, I don't know, I guess, like I said, they weren't really interacting with the environments too much, so it didn't really feel real at any point.
Yeah.
So they weren't even really trying for that, but it did kind of have that same look, so what did you guys think about the story? Like, I know it's supposed to be pulpy and all that stuff, but did you guys find it entertaining on a story level or no?
I mean, it was all right, I guess. I mean, like, you're talking about just, like, the search for a Shangri-La or whatever, or... Yeah, I mean, it just, like, takes, like, you know, kind of hallmarks from those kind of... those serials and kind of mishmashes them all into one. Like, I think first off, they're trying to hint that maybe it's UFOs, but then the mad scientist, and then the, like, spiritual elements, then, like, the Wizard of Oz. I mean, they just they're constantly referencing everything. So I think it's all right.
for like to just move the story along, it was fine, but it wasn't like anything like, oh my god, what are they really gonna find type thing.
Yeah. Tyler, what about you?
I was kind of surprised at the end that the spoiler when they get to the rocket ship, because I really didn't know what was going on for most of the film, so I was kind of along for the ride. Yeah, they never did explain what the little elephant was for.
Like, yeah.
were all the animals miniaturized for some reason?
That was powering everything.
But when we look at the spaceship, they're all going on normal size.
Yeah, I didn't see the giant arc part coming because
they were hinting at all that religious stuff earlier on, you know, like Adam and Eve and
it kind of fell apart. Yeah. Like, it kind of fell apart for me.
They're like, let's pack in Jesus and the creation of the earth as well, because we can't forget that.
Garden of Eden.
It's
like, it was funny with the people. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
It was funny seeing that guy from The Mummy, the kind of the guide in The Mummy with Brendan Fraser.
Oh, right.
With the big guy that led them to Shangri-La. Yeah. It kind of reminded me of The Mummy from 97 or whatever. And it was kind of another movie that kind of tried to make itself 1930s Universal Pictures style.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. Like the whole Shambhala and Shangri-La and city of, and all that stuff. I don't know if you guys have played a game called Uncharted 2.
Uncharted 2, yeah. Definitely. I was totally reminded of that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, Uncharted 2 stole a lot from Sky Captain.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware because this was the first time I'd seen it, but I was like, wow, they really did. And like the look and stuff too. Like there's this one scene where Jude Law is kind of walking outside. I think it was right after that scene that Tower just mentioned with the dude from The Mummy. They like walk outside and have new clothes on, and he's like standing on this bridge that kind of has a Lord of the Rings type vibe to it, and there's all these waterfalls and
stuff.
This big kind of cityscape of Shambhala in the background, and it looks very much like a specific level from Uncharted 2.
Uncharted 2,
like, man,
totally. Go ahead.
My fantasy baseball team is the Shangri-La Shockers, and so I googled Shangri-La and to get a picture of it like 3 years ago, and so I set it as that picture, and then when I watched the movie I realized it was the backdrop of Shangri-La in Sky Captain of the World of Tomorrow. So it all comes full circle.
There you go. That's pretty cool. Another aspect I liked, kind of on a writing level, and again, this is not like a huge great thing that deserves a bunch of praise, but I kind of liked how they hinted at the history of all these different characters, you know, how Sky Captain had these history with all these women and stuff, but they didn't ever really spell it out. I feel like if that movie was made today, they would either instantly make a prequel explaining point by point exactly what happened with all these characters, or just spell it out later on in the movie. There's not enough sense, I think, in today's kind of film landscape of unresolved things that, you know, just like a sense of history. Like, it felt like we were dropped into the middle of this story and these characters had been existing before the movie began. And I don't feel like a lot of movies today have that same the sense of history and stuff like that. I don't know if that might be just something that I kind of picked up on. I don't know if that struck out to you guys at all.
A little bit.
Yeah, Sky Captain today would have had to go train in Tibet under Liam Neeson, the former Sky Captain, and then come back and save the world.
To avenge his kidnapped daughter.
Yeah, something with a backstory line. But yeah, I agree with you, Ben. I did like that, where even at the beginning of the film, you know, Sky Captain is already established and they call on him. And he comes and he does his thing. It all works, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely like that it had heart in the right spot. Like, you know, it was like kind of well intentioned, and I like it for that. But because I just rewatched it before, you know, coming on here, and it just still feels so flat to me. And I understand that part of that is the style they were emulating and going for, but just didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. I was thinking Gwyneth Paltrow, she was made for this role because a lot of her, she kind of
God, I fucking hate, that's like the character I hate the most.
She has like this
Holly Perkins. Hey, Joe, you're going to do this for me, Joe? Watch out. Or like when they're doing the scene in the city where she's like, trust me, I know the directions.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, go down Broadway. It's like, shut up.
She has that flat way of acting that just makes it perfect. Like, she would have been a superstar in 1947.
For sure.
Yeah,
Polly Perkins, Lois Lane, they're all stereotypical journalistic women. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was, I think Jude Law probably realized that, because this movie reteams Jude Law and Gwyneth Paltrow after a movie called The Talented Mr. Ripley. I don't know if you guys have seen that one.
Yeah.
But that came out, like, I don't know, 5 years beforehand or something. And Jude Law was one of the first of the major stars in the movie to, like, join the project. And then he brought Gwyneth Paltrow on. So I think, Tyler, he probably, like, had that in mind. Like, hey, who's one of the actresses that, like, is one of, you know, the kind of A-listers that is a terribly flat actress? Oh, Gwyneth Paltrow. I'll see if she'll jump on board here. Okay, so one other thing that I wanted to mention was the design of some of the planes and robots and creatures and stuff. Again, is the same type of stuff we've been mentioning with the pulp feel and everything. But I thought that in the beginning, everything looked really cool with, like, the Zeppelins and the planes and stuff. And then as the movie progressed, everything got more and more ridiculous. Like, those bird planes that kind of look like dive bomb, like one of those.
Like seagulls, the TIE fighter. What?
And they actually have wings that physically flap. I'm like, that's not aerodynamically.
No, like, exactly.
Newton's rolling over in his grave.
And then, like, the big kind of what look like sentinels from X-Men, like those robots in the very beginning when they're, like, stomping through the streets and stuff. I was like, okay, I'm fine with that. They can fly, whatever, that's fine. And then, like, not at the end, but when the base gets destroyed and those other robots come in and they have, like, tentacles for arms, it's just like, who is designing these creatures? What's going on here?
How about the airship? Did you like the airship that Angelina Jolie is on?
It was just a giant British.
It's like, how the hell is that flying like that? It's so.
Yeah, there was no propulsion system shown on that thing at all. It was just kind of floating there.
That one part, you know, in the end when they do see what's the villain's name, Tokenoff, message.
Mm-hmm.
You know that who that is, right? That's Laurence Olivier.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, I mean, that's kind of a cool little reference for.
Yeah,
cool how they did that. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I was kind of looking it up after. I was like, oh, okay, well, because I didn't recognize him, because I guess they use footage from, like, early on in his life and stuff, and I know him from more of his later work, I guess.
That was like a cool little Easter egg.
Yeah, it was like the Brando thing in Superman Returns. You know how they
right exactly.
But yeah, I thought it was kind of
cool. Way before that.
What's that?
He's like one of the most. He's like one of the most famous British, like, actors. He's a famous Shakespearean actor.
Yeah, did a lot of Shakespeare stuff.
And I knew he was. I didn't know if he was in a famous, like, War of the Worlds or something like that.
Probably. He was in a lot, and he also did a lot of, like, voiceover work. So he did a lot of these, like, really iconic voiceovers for, like, shows and movies and stuff. So
he's just, like, one of those people in film history that's, like,
it's, like, really iconic.
Yeah, he's like a marker. You know, people are like, okay, Olivier Brando. You know, and they just kind of name generations after people. Like, once you say that, you have, like, an acting style in mind because you mentioned Laurence Olivier. But. Well, I don't know. Is there anything in particular else that you guys wanted to bring up about this?
Nope.
Tyler?
No, I'm good. We can get closing thoughts.
Yeah. Let's do some closing thoughts. So just go, Tyler, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, it was a ride. It was a movie. Liked how it looked, like how it felt. Like they were grabbing stuff from 50 years ago. If they meant to do that, awesome. If they didn't mean to do that, then, well, they should have maybe said they meant to do that. I think it's worth a watch. It was only like 100 and something minutes, so it's not like a, you know, arduous 227 minutes long, which may drag you down a little bit. But for what it was worth, I mean, it was just six serials packed together, so you get the whole story. And it was entertaining, so check it out.
Rafi?
I mean, I think, you know, I think when it came out, I was, like, a little more impressed with the visual style. After rewatching it, it's cool, but it really doesn't, like, wow me the same way I guess it would have 5 or 6 years ago whenever it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I just feel like, despite the fact they were maybe going for it, the stale acting and just all the cliches and all just kind of the bland ride. I never really got excited about what was happening in this movie. And I kind of just was always kind of shaking my head
and was like, why is Gwyneth Paltrow blabbing about something that she has obviously no idea about and intentionally bad, or is it just bad because she can't really act? I don't know. Just not an enjoyable movie for me. I guess if you've never seen it, it might be worth checking out just to see the visual style. Mm-hmm. But if you can stick with it for the story, then bravo for you.
Yeah, right on. I liked it. I would recommend seeing it at least once, just like you said, for all those reasons and for the same reasons as Tyler said, because of the pulp feel and just seeing, if you guys remember The Rocketeer, there's like that scene where they have this propaganda thing where all the Nazis want to take over with the jetpacks and stuff. It mm-hmm. kind of has that kind of look to it. There's
But The Rocketeer has heart. You know, that movie, like, at least a little more than this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Rocketeer is like...
And, like, that's the reason, like, The Rocketeer is great. It's not because he had the jetpack and the cool little helmet.
Sure.
It's because, like, they developed his character and you kind of cared about him. Like, I don't ever care about Polly Perkins or Sky Captain or Angelina Jolie, any of these characters. They could just, like, you know, I wouldn't mind if they all just died in the end. That probably would have made me happy.
You know, I actually agree with that, even though I liked the movie more than you did. But yeah, this is no Rocketeer. That's not what I'm trying to say. Yeah, I just mean, okay. Like, visually.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
How does Dax escape at that one point where he just kind of shows up with the scientists?
Yeah, it didn't say. It was just one of those.
Let's not even
moments.
Get into Dax.
I mean. Another one. It was like the episode serial if it was made 6 years ago.
Yeah. Hey, Polly.
Hey, Sky Captain, let's get out of here.
How you doing, Mrs. Perkins? We should listen to her.
We'll be back at the Daily Journal in
no
time.
It's the Chronicle, Brands. Get it right.
Sorry. I lost my notes.
Yeah, no, I would recommend it because I actually had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was a harmless, kind of entertaining pulp story, and I had some fun with it. So, Tyler, let's go ahead and rev up the old Apple II and randomize what we're going to be watching next week.
I've got a bad feeling about this, Ben.
Why is that?
But I'll do it anyway. I don't know, man.
All right.
Let's crack it up.
All right.
Oh, look, it happened again. We're getting Lawrence of Arabia here, Ben, starring Peter O'Toole and Alec Guinness.
Okay.
That's a classic.
63.
I have never seen that, so.
Wow. Oh, it's definitely, if you have never seen it, it's great, but it is long.
Yeah. I think it's about 227 minutes, Ben.
Yep.
Okay. There we go. All right.
It's
well,
not
yeah.
It's available on Instant Watch. You're going to have to order the DVD if you have Netflix.
All right, well, this one will be up early in the week, so we'll give people a full, you know, a full week to be able to catch up with this episode and get that delivered. So let's go ahead and move on into the kind of listener feedback section. You guys can always email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com and call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. We also have a Twitter account now, which is twitter.com/njnmpodcast. So let's go ahead and read through the new Twitter followers. There's only a few of them. So at Doggy's House, thanks for the follow there. At sound_on_site. At Robert Venditti, HD Movie 2011, Anne Hathaway News without the E in news, Zombie Nicholas, and our good friend Raffi, who goes by twitter.com/Zaffi, Z-A-F-F-I. Mm-hmm. All right, so right on. We actually don't have any emails or voicemails this week. So if you guys, you know, let us know what you thought about Sky Captain. If you guys have seen this movie or rewatched it recently or anything, shoot us an email. Let us know what you think. You guys can always subscribe for free in iTunes and leave us a review there. It just takes a second. It'll help our visibility and all that jazz. Check us out on Facebook and at Twitter. Let's go ahead and finish up the character name game. So let's see if you guys can guess this. The character for this week is Kit Walker. So does anybody have any guesses as to what movie that character is from?
Sounds like Knight Rider the movie, but
that's kind of close a little bit, yeah. in tone maybe, if not in specifics.
Is it like it sounds like a comic character?
It, yes, I will give you that. Yes,
but I can't really pinpoint it. like mid-90s. I feel like I've heard this name before.
Yep, mid-90s sounds
close, right? But I cannot. I have no idea.
Tyler, any guesses?
What was that movie, The Shadow?
Ooh, that's very close. It's not it, but it's very, very close.
The Phantom.
Yes, The Phantom is correct. Yes, exactly.
Booyah. Oh, right, yes. Yeah.
Billy Zane's greatest and only role.
Oh, I was close with The Shadow.
You were very close, yeah. Man, yeah, you guys pinpointed that one pretty quickly. That's good.
Well, I let Raffy do the work. I just piggybacked on his answer.
You just came in and sniped the target at the
end. Yeah, I did. I was like, not The Shadow.
I would not have gotten that, though. I don't.
So the connection is Billy Zane obviously played the main character, Kit Walker, in the Phantom, and he also plays the character of Professor Roberts in The Roommate, which just came out this week.
I heard that's awful.
Yeah, I heard it's awful as well. All right, so let's go around the circle and just tell everybody where people can find us online. Tyler, let's start with you.
The Solar Sentinel and Destageddon are the two blogspot sites that I write on.
Mm-hmm. And you pretty much run the Not Just New Movies Twitter page, so people can contact you directly there if they wish, right?
If they want.
All right. Raffy, let's go to you.
Yeah, my personal website where you can check out all my movies and stuff because I'm a filmmaker as well is zaffi.com, ZAFFI.com. That's also my Twitter handle. And I also write for the movie news reviews website, The Film Stage, which is a really great site. So if you don't have that in your RSS, throw that in there. And yeah, we have a ton of great Sundance coverage, as I'm sure you guys do on Geek Tyrant and all that. But yeah.
Yep, cool. Yeah, you guys can track me down on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPears, writing at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast. You guys can also find me on the Geek Tyrant weekly podcast, which you can subscribe to in iTunes as well. Music for our show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com, and they're also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out over there. And next week we will be watching Lawrence of Arabia, so tune in for that one if you dare, if you can. And
I'll just watch the first half and we'll talk about that.
You know what? I wouldn't put that past you.
I'm going to fall asleep. I can review my nap if you want.
All right. Well, yeah. Tune in for a potential nap review from Tyler next week. And special thanks to Raffy for stopping by and hanging out with us. I appreciate it.
Hey, it was my pleasure. A lot of good times.
Cool. All right. Well, have a good week, guys. We'll talk to y'all later on.
I've got the blues, real bad. I got the blues, yeah. I got the blues, real bad. I done lost my baby, and she spent all the money that.